Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry, and my co-host this week is Farai Chidea in for Adori Doji.
Hello.
She's in the studio. Also, we've got two great guests to talk about a 5-4 decision, split decision from the Supreme Court, which narrows the scope of the Voting Rights Act. It's a technical decision, and we're going to talk about all the details, but it's important for two reasons. One, because the Voting Rights Act is a very important doctrine of American law. It comes from the Johnson administration. Listen to Lyndon Johnson speaking about what was at stake in the Voting Rights Act back in March of 1965.
Its object is to open the city of hope to all people of all races, because all Americans just must have the right to vote, and we are going to give them that right.
But any change in the Voting Rights Act is also significant because this, as a census year, is also a year when states begin to reapportion congressional districts. And the strategies for reapportioning are very, very important because they determine the representation of various groups and communities all over the United States. And we begin there with our discussion of this Supreme Court case. Nathaniel Personally, professor of law and political science at Columbia Law School. Nate is our pal and has been in the studio many times. And joining us for the first time is Richard Pildes, New York University law professor from a little farther down on the 4-5 train, co-director of the NYU Center on Law and Security. And you, I gather, are in favor of this Supreme Court decision's narrowing. And Nate, I gather you sort of argue against what the Supreme Court decided.
Well, I should say I filed a brief on behalf of neither party in the case, trying to take, you know, advocate the perspective of the political scientists and those of us who draw redistricting plans.
All right, we'll go
for it. I should also say I haven't actually taken a position on the case.
All right, fine. Fine. But I do understand that there is a slightly divergent, and we'll get to the divergence in your views. But, Richard, first of all, explain technically what is this narrowing, and what is the doctrine that's really being modified here or that the court decided not to extend?
Well, the best way to understand this problem is that it arises in a very different context than Lyndon Johnson was talking about in 1965. So here in North Carolina, you had an election district that had a 39% black population that was still electing black candidates because enough white voters were prepared to vote for the black candidate.
And there's a technical name, legal name, for a 39% minority population in a community like this.
This is called a coalition district, or the Supreme Court now calls it a crossover district, but it's not the traditional safe minority district, which usually meant a district that was majority African American, majority Hispanic. So we're now in an age in which districts that are not majority black or Hispanic still can elect black and Hispanic office holders in some circumstances. And
the question is, creating a coalition with other groups,
including with white voters who, as we just saw in the November election, are much more willing to vote for African-American candidates than they used to be.
So, Nate, how would the Voting Rights Act be a strategy or a mechanism to help communities like that in the reapportionment process?
Well, a lot of communities look to the redistricting process in order to enhance their representation in Congress and state legislatures. Usually that means, or historically, when you're talking about the Voting Rights Act, it means the creation of these districts where minorities could constitute a voting majority in the districts. And the question in this case was, could they also maybe have a legal entitlement to certain districts where there were less than 50%? And the court said no.
You know, Nate, there's the question of what constitutes gerrymandering. Some people have said that the Voting Rights Act created, all these bizarrely shaped districts. Other folks say, hey, these bizarrely shaped districts happen all the time just to try to, keep incumbents in office. How does this play out with the general trend that incumbents in Congress, as the maps are drawn, have over a 90% chance of being reelected? How does race and the Voting Rights Act play into that big picture?
One of the differences between the Voting Rights Act today and when Johnson first initiated it is that we have a whole set of minority incumbents, in part because of the creation of a lot of these districts. And so they can defend their interests in the political process. And so a lot of them often want districts that aren't excessively overconcentrated in terms of the percentages of minorities, but ones that are closer to 50% or even under 50%. And that's the context in which this case comes up, which is, well, can you sometimes push down the minority percentages in these districts and spread minorities out more efficiently to gain a greater number of districts?
Is it fair to say that the court is essentially saying to this North Carolina district, hey, folks, you want to get elected, you need to attract the votes of a broad constituency in your district. We're not going to help you out using the Voting Rights Act to redistrict so it's more favorable to you.
There is that idea. I mean, both the majority and the dissent were trying to make an argument from the standpoint of racial neutrality, that what they were trying to say is, well, the dissenters were saying, look, we should allow these kind of 30% districts to have legal claims under the Voting Rights Act because then it'll enhance crossover and coalition building. The majority was saying, look, if we start giving a legal entitlement to these kinds of districts, then the effect is going to be you're going to always be thinking about the Voting Rights Act every time you're drawing a district, no matter how big the minority population is.
Richard, when you think about this case and them actually sort of setting a number parameter, a 50% number, is there any flexibility, I guess is what I'm saying, in, you know, this ruling as to, you know, because in some areas there's a great amount of coalition building and in some there's none at all. I mean, do these laws ever reflect the tensions within certain communities or the variable differences in how race and politics play out?
Well, that's a great question because the situation today is so much more fluid and so much more complex than it used to be. You know, it used to be even 20 years ago, in many places, whites would vote for white candidates 90-95%. Blacks would vote for black candidates in similar proportion. And that has changed in a variety of ways. Again, you know, we now have a situation where both the Democratic and the Republican parties are led by African Americans. So how the Voting Rights Act should apply, does apply in those circumstances, is very complicated. What the court's decision makes clear is that legislatures have a lot of flexibility still to draw these districts if they want to, or to draw different kinds of districts with different coalitions. But the Voting Rights Act doesn't require the kind of district that was being asked for here. That's all the decision really holds.
I mean, you know, if you take Farai's point and extend it to the extreme complexity, you could have a situation where, you know, because minorities don't automatically vote for a minority candidate, where there is a 55% minority constituency within a community, but because they traditionally vote 30-20 or, you know, 50-60 or something, they split their vote from candidate to candidate, you could create this Democratic coalition. Well, it's not, you know, they don't always vote for the minority, but there's enough of a sort of split that maybe we would want to, you know,
help out. It's a very, very difficult problem. And to go back to the Lyndon Johnson moment,
right,
which is one of the great moments of his presidency, the problem back then was essentially getting people the right to vote and get to the ballot box. When we talk about the Voting Rights Act today, most of the time that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the kinds of issues you are asking about. And so how the act ought to apply to the design of districts where we don't have monolithic black communities, we don't have monolithic Hispanic communities, we don't have monolithic white communities in the same way we did even 20 years ago, let alone 40 years ago, you know, puts enormous pressure on the statute and creates very, very difficult legal and policy problems.
Well, just quickly, census is coming up, and I guess, Nate, I'll go to you. What do we see in general? I mean, this is just one aspect of how, you know, districts are drawn. But with the new census coming up, is there going to be a tough battle over reapportionment in general?
There will be. There always is. There'll be a battle between the states as to how many congressmen they get, and there'll be battles within states as to how to draw the districts. And I should say, just to go back to this point, you know, there's great diversity in the level of racially polarized voting in America. So you look, for example, at this last election, Barack Obama actually did worse than John Kerry in some of the Deep South states, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas. He actually did significantly worse than John Kerry. And then, of course, in places like Virginia and in North Carolina, he did significantly better among whites. And so it's you know, there's sort of different trends in different parts of the country. But we're going to see the you know, redistricting is a quagmire. It's what keeps Rick and me in business. And you know, it's
counterintuitive for most Americans. I think when Americans look at their congressional district every 2 years, they go, "What the heck is that about?" It feels really anti-democratic,
it's,
I think, to Americans, regardless of party.
Well, I want to go back to Farai's question. It's a horrible problem. It's really the much bigger problem here. We have, a very unhealthy situation where politicians draw their own districts.
Do you think it's as big a problem, Nate?
Well, it tends to be that, you know, we think of democracy as voters choosing their electors or choosing their politicians. Actually, redistricting is more important. It's when politicians choose their voters.
politicians choose their voters. That's exactly
no,
right. That's
no other country does it this way. It's a real, real pathology in our system.
Any chance the Supreme Court would get a challenge on this whole reapportionment issue in this critical census year? Yes or no?
No.
No?
Not really.
Wow.
No.
Politicians choose their own voters. Only in America, folks. Nate Persilie, professor of law and political science at Columbia Law School, and Richard Pildes, New York University law professor, talking about the Supreme Court decision narrowing the Voting Rights Act as reapportionment gets started. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.